This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
On the line is the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider Nick Kostos. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. And be sure to listen to the You Better You Bet podcast for more analysis. Just search You Better You Bet wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, Nick. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, guys? I'm good. My team's up 2-0 in the ALCS.
I was about to say, please treat us with kid gloves when it comes to gloating.
Agitated?
I believe as the kids would put it, in our feels.
That's all I understand. I don't even think the Yankees played, and I am a Yankee fan. I want to remove the fan bias, and here we just go. Have an objective.
Are you gonna say what we're hearing most Yankee fans? We haven't even played our best baseball yet.
Well, you guys watch the games. Do you think they have?
I don't. Do you think the Guardians have played their best baseball
yet? Oh, I think honestly, game two looked like a Little League World Series game with the base running. It was terrible. My big takeaway from that, and I said this with you guys last week, that I don't think the Yankees will win the World Series when and if they get there. I don't know, if those teams are going to run the bases like that, and that's what it's going to be, I don't know. I'd be feeling good if I were a Dodgers fan right now, up 2-1 in the NLCS against the Mets.
Oh, Nick, man, you had me at when and if. That made me feel, you touched my heart there to make me think the Guardians have a shot. Who do you like tonight?
I like the Yankees tonight. I wouldn't say I love the Yankees tonight. I don't know. I think sometimes when we talk about bets for series, right, you can feel really confident about the outcome of a series. So I can go into the series, Yankees-Guardians, and say, I think the Yankees are going to, I feel really strongly, I bet on it, that the Yankees are going to win this series against the Guardians. Now, the way the games play out, that could go any one of a number of different right ways, right? Do the Yankees win tonight, lose game four, win game five? Do they win tonight, lose game four, win game five? Do they sweep? Does it go back to six? Do we go back to New York? I'm not sure about that. I do think the Yankees will win the series. I feel very strongly about that. And I will bet the Yankees in the game tonight. Just feels like the Yankees have so much momentum now, and the Yankees got this far in the postseason, and people can point to the lackluster competition with the Royals in round one, the way the first two games have played out. Not that the Guardians are a bad team, they are a good team, but obviously you guys even said it, right? They haven't played their best, right? The Yankees have managed to get this far with their best player, with the soon-to-be American League MVP Aaron Judge basically doing nothing, and it looked like he got off the schneid in a big way at the end of game two with the home run. And we had Jim Bowden on our show yesterday on You Better You Bet, former Major League Baseball general manager, who works for a ton of different outlets doing MLB media. And Jim said that he thought when Stephen Vogt and the Guardians intentionally walked Juan Soto early in the game, in game two, to get to Aaron Judge, he pointed to, and he's been in clubhouses, right? He's been in dugouts, etc. Pointed to the reaction in the Yankee dugout and Aaron Judge's, his personal reaction when that happened, as if to say, they woke the sleeping dragon, and that Judge looked locked in later in the game when he hit that home run. Now, that's largely anecdotal, right? There's no statistic we can point to that says, his bat speed was this versus this, so now we can actually say he's more locked in. So it's anecdotal, but I think it does kind of pass the sniff test and the smell test there. I think you get a big Aaron Judge game tonight. I do like the Yankees to win tonight, and I do think they're going to win the series.
So when you're looking at this, are you looking at series bets or are you looking more player props?
I think series bets at this point, the only way you would bet the series is if you wanted to bet the Guardians. The Yankees are, unless you have the tolerance for extreme risk, the Yankees are minus 800, meaning you have to lay $800 to win 100 on the Yankees to win the series. So I think the only way, if you want to bet the series price now, you have to be a really optimistic Guardians fan and take plus 550 with Cleveland, which would be bet 100, just using 100 as a round number, to win $550. So I think this series now becomes more of of a game-by-game betting series for me. I have my Yankees bet already to win the series before it started, so I'm good on that. Now it's just game-by-game. I'll bet the Yankees tonight. I don't think they're a lock. I think you could certainly make the case for the Guardians. I do actually think the Guardians are kind of being a little overlooked right now. Doesn't mean that they'll win, but they were awesome in the regular season, and they have played bad baseball the first two games of this series. You would think coming home that you'll get a better Guardians effort, and maybe that does translate to a win tonight in Game 3.
Nick, I think this is one of the things, like when Ohio got legalized gambling, I think this is one of those core questions, and I find it really interesting to ask you this because I think you're in that spot right now. Betting with your heart versus betting with your mind. And so, like, for you, how do you – I know you do this for a profession. So, but, I mean, people who are trying to jump in on this, thinking about betting with their heart versus betting with their mind, just kind of touch on that.
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you out there listening, if you bet for entertainment, like you have a full-time job, and you bet for fun, or maybe like you bet for like a little extra spending cash on the weekends, whatever, that's all great, whatever your MO is, I would suggest just bet within your means. So, you know, let's say you like the Guardians tonight, and you want to bet them, and it's more of like you're betting them because, like, you want them to win. Maybe you don't think they're going to, but you want them to win. Or, like, the Browns are a better example, right, on Sunday, mm-hmm. where you want to bet the Browns to beat the Cincinnati Bengals, and maybe you hope Deshaun Watson gets it turned around, whatever. Just, you know, bet an amount of money where if you lose your bet, you're not going to be doubly pissed that your team lost and you lost your bet. Just like, obviously, just control the amount that you bet. And if you do that, you know, and you're at peace with losing X amount of money, then I think any way you choose to bet, I think can be productive because you're betting for entertainment. And if you lose, like, you'll still be able to pay that month's rent, for example.
Nick Costas, Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Man, he came on our airwaves last week and said, hey, the Browns probably are going to cover this one. Turned out they did turn around and cover. Looking at this week's game, Nick, against the Bengals, what are you thinking?
Yeah, so we've had like a lot of line movement on this game throughout the week. So I'm looking at it right now, and we're almost on the way to going back to Cincinnati -6. So this was Cincinnati -4.5 on Monday. And then the line starts to trickle up towards Cincinnati. Then people just organically like the Bengals a little bit. Mm-hmm. Think Cincy's about to like rip off some wins here after the rough starts of the season. And obviously I think bettors are kind of anti the Cleveland Browns in general, right? I liked them last week and they did cover. Also, like, we did get a blocked field goal return for a touchdown, obviously, which helped matter. So, like, the Bengals start getting bet, and then the Amari Cooper trade happens, and Cincy just gets blasted in the market. And we almost reach 7, so Bengals go up to a 6.5-point favorite, and it's at that point, then, that bettors see value on the Cleveland Browns. And in case anyone in the audience is wondering, like, why is that the case, just, like, the simple answer is, think about the math of the NFL, like, 3, 6, 7, like, these are all important numbers with the way the math of the NFL works, so bettors say, okay, like, 6.5 and 6 are valuable numbers with the Cleveland Browns as a home underdog. So now we're sitting with Cincinnati as a 5.5-point road favorite. And to me, this number is just correct. At 6 or more, I would be interested in the Browns. If you made me pick a side of the game right now, I'd probably still take Cleveland. We have seen the Browns in the Stefanski era have a lot of success against the Zach Taylor-led Cincinnati Bengals. Myles Garrett, you know, generally wrecks the Cincinnati offensive line. We've seen it happen a million times. And I think we see guys in betting markets just as an overall concept, I think something that's like really important for people to think about, actually, where the first game without someone, without a star, can generally go pretty well. A recent example will be the Giants 2 weeks ago in the first game without Malik Nabers with the concussion. They go on the road and win at Seattle. The second game without Malik Nabers, the offense does absolutely nothing. They lose by 10 last Sunday night against the Cincinnati Bengals. So this would qualify as game one for Cleveland's offense without Amari Cooper. And I understand, like, Nick Chubb's expected back. We don't know what this is going to look like for Nick Chubb. So maybe it's like selling that news and selling the pessimism around the Browns' offense without Amari Cooper, who, by the way, hasn't done much this year. Not even saying it's his fault, it's Watson's fault. But, I mean, he hasn't done that much this year. I don't know if it's that big a deal that he's not going to be playing in this game for Cleveland. So, again, at 6 or more, that's a buy point for me to actually bet on the Cleveland Browns this week.
Just quickly, I got about a minute left here. Just tonight's game, what do we got? Saints and Broncos. I look at the, and I think, for me, you look at that game, and 37's the over-under. And, man, I mean, The Saints have been in some games with some heavy numbers, 51 on the bad side, and then earlier in the season, you know, they put up over 40. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I think it's a really, really fascinating, like, real life. Like, if you're not betting on the game, like, I don't know how many people are watching this game tonight without betting or fantasy. Mm-hmm. Reason why, you know, Derek Carr is not going to play for the Saints. Spencer Rattler is going to start again, the rookie fifth rounder, and the Saints will be without both of their top two wide receivers. Chris Olave is out with a concussion. Rashid Shaheed, their speedy young wideout who's had a breakout season, is going to have meniscus surgery, might miss the rest of the season. So this is going to be now a fifth round rookie starting quarterback with like three backup receivers as the three top receivers up against a tough Denver defense. And the Denver offense, obviously quarterbacked by a rookie in Bo Nix, an offense that hasn't set the world on fire. I think that's how you get to a game with the total being what it is, in the high 30s at 37. The Broncos have been bet up now to a 3-point road favorite. I think that's right. I've been saying on my show all week that any number below 3, I would consider the Denver Broncos in this game. Now we're sitting at 3, and I don't think there's anything to do. I can give you guys quickly, if you would like, if the people want, some prop thoughts in this game and some touchdown bets, if you guys are interested.
Sure, go ahead, quick.
Okay, so very quickly here. Yep. So New Orleans is without its first two wide receivers. I would look to target and pick one of these guys, Mason Tipton, and you don't know who these guys are, it doesn't matter. Mason Tipton is going to be one of New Orleans' top three receivers tonight. So is former Dolphin Cedric Wilson. I think both of those guys are viable in the anytime touchdown market, and I would also take a look at former Notre Dame running back, rookie running back for Denver, Audric Estime, who played last week. He was on IR, had a couple carries last week. Javonte Williams and Jaleel McLaughlin for Denver have both not been successful running the ball this year. I think there's a decent chance Estime gets some run in this game tonight for Denver. I think Estime is worth a bet for any time touchdown, and I will also have a small bet on Estime. I like the Broncos in the game, so imagine this game script, right? Denver's up by 10, end of the game, they're driving, the game's over. Like, Estime's in the game, Estime to score the last touchdown of the game. You can bet this at all the domestics and BetMGM. 35-1, Audric Estime, last touchdown scorer coming up tonight.
All right, Nick, thank you very much. Say goodbye, my friend.
You got it. Wishing everybody minimal sweats, winning bets, the absolute very best of luck.
Thanks, Nick.
On the line is the host of You Better You Bet and Odyssey Sports Betting Insider, Nick Kostos. Insider calls are presented by BetMGM. Go check out all the latest lines today on the BetMGM app. And be sure to listen to the You Better You Bet podcast for more analysis. Just search You Better You Bet wherever you find your podcasts.
He's Dan Menigan. I'm Andy Baskin. Always a pleasure to have you on board today. We get set for Guardians-Yankees Game 3 tonight over at the ballpark. 5:08, first pitch for tonight's game. Get in your seats early. Let's have some fun. Let's get that place rocking. Let's squelch the Yankee fans that'll be in the house. You know, spend all the money you want here in our fair city. We enjoy it. Your money spends great, especially in our hotels, our restaurants. We love having you here, and we hope you get great hospitality while you're in Cleveland, and you sit around and go, well, you know, things are really reasonable here when I go to buy things. We love when you say that. We're good with that. Spend as much money as possible. I mean, really, just empty out your entire checking account. We're good with that. And then leave. We're good. And then we don't have to worry about it again. But I do hope that you're not very loud and proud tonight at the ballpark. We've seen it too many times, including the World Series against the Cubs. That was brutal. Absolutely brutal. In fact, as I was driving in today, Dan and I were talking, and I don't know why my first inkling, I saw somebody pull up next to me at a red light, and I was talking to Dan, and I looked over, and they were wearing a Yankees hat. And my initial reaction was to tell them how many games – the Guardians, how many wins they'll have after tonight. I wanted to let them know. I wanted to say, hey, we'll have one win tonight. And I was thinking if there was a gesture for that, and I couldn't think of one. So, and then I looked, and then the license plate on the back of the car was from Florida, and I was like, all right, maybe if they're from Florida, transplants. I mean, Florida's loyal to nothing, so they might as well be loyal to the Yankees because, you know, Tampa's a huge place for Yankee fans to be, especially during spring training. And then I got to thinking, what's worse, Yankee fan or Steeler fan? You tell me.
Yankee fan. All day, all night, Yankee fan. They are the most arrogant group of people on the face of this earth. And there are delightful Yankee fans that I really enjoy with, including the Poobah. And I always enjoyed talking baseball with the Poobah. But the vast majority of these Yankee fans are just insufferable. They're just, oh, well, you know, we... Everybody else stinks until they become Yankees, and then they really become ball players.
Do you have to do the John Sterling voice when you say it?
Well, yeah, of course.
So you'd be like,
Everybody else stinks.
Because
he's right
for
up there
Yankee
with
fan.
He's right up there with him.
Who, Sterling?
Yankee fans drive me up the wall. I can't stand them. I can't stand the team. I can't stand the pinstripes. I can't stand the lack of facial hair. I can't stand all of it. All of it is insufferable. It drives me berserk. Oh, you can't grow a beard because we're Yankees. We're lunch pail. We're supposed to go to work here. Mattingly, I thought I told you to shave those sideburns. All that crap. Get it out. Just get all of it out. Paul O'Neill can go kick rocks.
Hey, he's from Columbus. Chill. You got to chill on Paul O'Neill.
Oh, he's the... Him on those broadcasts. Michael...
Stop, man.
Yeah, you can go down the line. They all drive me nuts. The ones who are, like, good... David Cone, I'm cool with. David Cone, you're all right.
See, I was cool with Paul O'Neill because I liked the way he played the game. I'm also cool with Aaron Boone. I hope Yankee fans hate him. I love him. I love Aaron. I loved him when he was here, when he played for that short time. He will always be AB to me. I'm a fan of his. I want him to lose miserably tonight and over the next couple of games. And then maybe, you know, Brett comes on the station still every once in a while. So we can talk about that. But AB, I give it up to you. I just want your team to get beat. Volnick, what's worse, Yankee fan or Steeler fan?
No, it's downright Yankees fans. Yankees fans
without
are,
a doubt.
Without
like
a doubt.
Not even a question mark.
Not even
on
a
that.
Question. Yankees fans to me are paralleled with like Cowboys fans, where it's all you can do is bring up the past. The Yankees haven't been to World Series since what, 2009? And they'll still talk like...
Oh, my God. It's like the great drought listening to them talk about this. Oh, we haven't been there in 15 years. Oh, we're the Yankees.
But it's either that or they talk about the success of the New York Yankees over the history of... I don't care. It's been 15 years. They haven't done anything. They spend the most money in baseball year after year, and they do nothing. The Cowboys are the same way. You talk about all the championships you had in the 80s and 90s, and now it's nothing, and you still can't get over it.
And how we're allowed to be insufferable jerks because we're Yankee fans. That's the other part of it. Is it's like, yeah, we can be arrogant jerks. You know why? Because we're Yankee fans, and that's what the Yankees do. Oh, we got to fire Brian Cashman. Oh, because he hasn't been to a World Series. Fire Brian Cashman. It's like Brian Cashman's one of like the five best GMs in baseball. The hell's wrong with you? Like, it's insufferable.
This is a special edition of Yankeeography here on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland.
They are the worst. I had a Yankee fan in my life, and he was a wonderful, wonderful person and sadly passed away. But when they traded for Giancarlo Stanton, I walked up and went, well, congratulations. You just got one of the best power hitters in baseball for a bag of magic beans. And he goes, well, we don't know if he's any good. He hasn't done it as a Yankee. I was like, I want to throw something at you just for saying those words. Like, I just want to take my shoe off and fling it at you.
All right, so as you know, I have like this levels of fandom that I can deal with, right? And so I'm good with some people about good things. These are the people that drive me crazy, okay? The people that drive me crazy, like if you're a Yankees fan and you're from New York, I'm down with it, man. You're cheering for your team. Good for you, right? If you have someone you know that was drafted by the Yankees organization or a very close friend that has been there or done that and has some sort of direct tie to the Yankees, okay, I'm down with that. Maybe you were born in New York and moved to Northeast Ohio. I'm okay with you being a Yankees fan, and I respect you for that. It's the bandwagon knuckleheads who were born in Northeast Ohio that just wanted to be a part of the Yankee whatever. They're the ones I can't stand, and I hope you don't go to the ballpark tonight. I hope you're not there. I can't stand you. Like, you're pathetic. You're absolutely pathetic if you're a Yankees fan that was born and raised in Cleveland and has zero tie. Zero tie. I'll give it to you. Maybe your dad or your mom was born in the Bronx or born in Brooklyn and moved to Cleveland and raised you as a Yankee fan. You know what? I'm okay with that. I can live with that, right? Like, if my kids ever move away, I want them to be Browns fans, Guardians fans, Indians fans, whatever you want to call them, Cavalier fans. I'm okay with that. Like, second generation, I'm down with it. I'm cool. But, man, if you were like, I don't know, born in Parma as a Yankees fan and have no ties at all to New York or anything like that, and you just wanted to hop on the bandwagon, dude, man, you belong in the cesspool. I have no respect for you. I don't understand you. I don't get it. Well, the logo's cool. The logo's
cool. Shut up. Just shut up. The logo is cool.
But I'm interested that, like, you guys didn't even budge.
No.
When I said Steelers fans or Yankee fans.
Because
why is that? Because we're so much like Steeler fans. Like, they're like our twin in a lot of ways. I hate to say it. They're like our winning twin when it comes to football.
Because if the Steelers were to have traded for Brandon Ayuk, you would not have heard Steeler fans go, oh, we don't know if Brandon Ayuk's ever good. He's never done it in the black and gold. You would have never heard those words. You would have never heard anything like that out of them if they would have traded for Devontae Adams. Well, we don't know if he's any good. He hasn't done it in black and gold. Like, that whole different level of arrogance that comes with Yankee fans is the reason why they will forever be the most insufferable fan group on the face of this earth. It's 1-1. It's right up there. You will never hear Steeler fans, as much as you may want to lose it on them every so often, there is an arrogance to it, but it's not that high. It's not that stupid, ugh, that filth that just comes in with those pinstripes.
Okay, but you guys are prepared to, if you're watching the game on TV tonight, ugh, to hear loud Yankee cheers throughout the game. Like, it's going to make you ill. It makes me ill when I hear it. And it's,
I mean,
Guardians fans.
A hell of a thing.
I just hope Guardians fans, if you sold your ticket to a Yankees fan, I hope you got triple the worth. I really do. I hope you were able to get triple, quadruple the worth, and just took them to the bank on all of it. Because I hope you don't do it. I hope you don't do it. It drives me crazy. Sell it to a Guardians fan that really wants to go to the game.
Oh, and the insufferable love of Derek Jeter as well. Ugh. Oh, God.
I can't tell. I may have given up my relationship with A-Rod there.
The horrific Eric G. Derek Jeter. Oh, Mr. October, Mr. November.
It was a good venting session, boys. I enjoyed that.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Daryl Ryder, brought to you by Scheibe Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
Look at that.
I'm currently hiding in a hallway right now.
Well, that's good. Daryl.
Like I do every Thursday.
Daryl, there was a question. We're going to bring this up a little bit later on the show. That came up on the afternoon show. About trading Deshaun Watson. I know we talked about this a little bit on the podcast. Is that even on the board?
Yeah, I just don't think it's feasible from a salary cap management standpoint, from a financial standpoint, and then also, too, from anybody actually wants Deshaun Watson standpoint. Hmm. So, I just think that is extremely impossible to pull off. From my perspective.
Okay. Daryl, how does Deshaun Watson and the offensive line get better after this 1-5 start? I'm trying to be optimistic.
Run the ball.
That's it? Is that easy?
Yeah. Don't let him throw it. Yeah. Don't let him throw it. Because they can't do anything when he throws it. So, I asked Ken Dorsey this morning if maybe focusing the offense instead of being pass-based into a run-based offense, if that was a possibility, especially with Nick Chubb returning this week along with Nyheim Hines. And obviously Ken Dorsey really didn't provide much illumination there, but I don't think I've come up with much worse ideas than that, and I don't really think that that's a terrible idea to if you're not going to go back to the Kevin Stefanski offense and scrap what you've put in this year, which isn't working, you know, why not go ahead and come up with a situation where you just try and run the ball better, more, I should say, because when you look at what the Browns do offensively, they're ranked 30 and below in just about every meaningful category, except for their 28th running the ball and their 20th in yards per run play. So they just haven't had opportunities to really run the ball significantly because of the failures in the passing game. So why not try and come out and run the football for a while and see what can happen? I mean, there's no harm. You're already 1-5, your season shot. You can't throw it well with any level of consistency. You've had zero explosive plays down the field going for 40 or more yards. You can't score 20 points a game, and you can't throw for 200 yards in a game. So I'm of the mindset with Nick Chubb coming back, and obviously you don't just lean on Nick. You mix it up. You mix the carries up. so you don't overwork him coming back. But I think they really need to lean into the run game much more than they have in weeks past.
What do you expect in Nick Chubb's first week back?
I don't know what to expect, honestly. I know what I hope for. I'm first, number one, hope he comes through injury-free and feeling good and feeling like himself. I hope he looks like himself and the player that we have, watched here for years and years and years. But I don't know what to expect. I really don't. It's a medical miracle that he's back already, considering the injury that he had and the fact that it required two surgeries to repair all the damage that knee suffered. And that's the second time that particular knee, that left knee, has had to be rebuilt, which is not, something that should, have everyone concerned. But he feels strong. He feels ready. We spoke to him yesterday. The Browns feel he's ready to go. So he'll definitely be on a pitch count, though. I've got to think that they will limit not just the amount of times he's on the field, but his touches.
Daryl, is there a clock up in Andrew Berry's office that is counting down the days and time until November 5th for the trade deadline at 4 o'clock?
I don't know. I'm not allowed on the second floor. So.
Okay. Can you be the investigative reporter that you are? Do you believe that there should be a clock in there that is counting down to November 5th?
I think Andrew Berry knows when the trade deadline is, and he won't have any problems navigating that. I think Amari Cooper's just the first trade. It's the first domino. And then as we go subsequent weeks here, we'll see what other, moves Berry makes. But I do not believe that is the last trade Andrew Berry is going to make.
What said players do you think we should keep our eyes on?
I think anyone that has an expiring contract on the roster. Guys like Za'Darius Smith, Rodney McLeod.
Wait. You're going to give up all of our offense? Come on, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think of guys that would actually garner attention. I'd be all for them trading Jedrick Wills, but I don't know that anybody actually wants Jedrick Wills. There's, Elijah Moore's in the final year of his contract. I think Mo Hurst is eligible for free agency in the spring. So, guys like that, if you can accumulate some more mid-round picks, because you can always take those mid-round picks and use them to move up into earlier rounds. But I don't see a scenario where there's a first-round pick to be had or a second-round pick to be had. Because if you acquire one of those type of picks, that means you have traded a cornerstone of the franchise. And I don't believe that this requires a massive overhaul that some people want to talk about. Like, they're not that far away. Their problems are not as deep to require those type of things. So, I really feel it comes down to one player that it just, would solve the problems. And they just have to be willing to make that adjustment to solve the problem. And I don't believe right now, clearly they're obviously not willing to do that at this point, but I don't get this. They have to, this thought that they have to trade Miles and they have to trade Denzel and they have to trade all these cornerstone pieces that they built this team around. And go into another massive rebuild. Like, I completely disagree with that philosophy.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Daryl Ryder, joining us, of course, sponsored by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. So, Daryl, from what you just laid out right there was my thought, because you don't often see in the NFL teams, frankly, put up the rummage sale sign in the front yard and just completely unload at the trade deadline. Like, you just don't see that in the NFL.
Yeah, well, and that's why, I don't think that Andrew Berry is going to wait until November 5th to make whatever roster changes he wants to make. I think it's going to be a progression as you go forward. And it's like, just look at Amari, right? I mean, that's just such a genius move because he gave up a fifth round pick 2 years ago to get him from Dallas, right? You get two 1,000 yard seasons out of the guy, and then you end up trading him for a third round pick. Like you, and that's 2 years down the line. So you got production out of a guy. He's 2 years older. And then on top of it, you got two rounds better in a draft pick back for him. That is, for me, that's just fantastic general managing and roster management, but that's just me. And so I think Barry deserves a lot of credit for that. But yeah, I think that between now and November 5th, he's going to gradually, if opportunities pop up where there's a player here that can fill a need on another team, I think Andrew Barry is in the perfect position to exploit that.
Daryl, how much of this 1-5 start is on Kevin Stefanski? He says it after, it's on us to coach better. We hear him say it at least twice a week. How much of it is truly on him?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that's just media speak. And, you know, he certainly doesn't want to single out any players. Look, there are, you know, the mental mistakes, the communication problems. Those are things I can blame on Kevin Stefanski and his coaching staff, right? Because those are things that shouldn't happen in games. Or if they happen in a game, it should happen once and that's the end of it, right? And unfortunately, we've seen the pre-snap penalties, especially on the offensive side of the ball, be a problem. We've seen problems with miscommunication where they're either having to burn timeouts or he can't go for it in situations in which he wants to go for it, right? So those elements, yes, I do put that on Kevin Stefanski. Are those fireable offenses? Not in my view. I just feel like that they're mitigating circumstances that are leading to those problems as well. But, we can sit here and argue play calls till we're blue in the face. And when it comes to those type of things, I lean on the players. I don't like criticizing coaches for play calls because if the players execute what's called, then I think the coaches end up looking a lot smarter, right? It's when they're not executed that things looks dumb. Like the one play call I will criticize, I believe it was 3rd and 1 last week, and they did like the sweep handoff to Cedric Tillman, and he just got absolutely blown up in the backfield, right? He couldn't even turn the corner. And, you know, Philadelphia read that play. If you go back and you watch that play, you can see one of the Eagles defensive ends pointed it out before the ball was even snapped. He was pointing at Cedric Tillman on the other side of the field, and he read it immediately and went in and was able to help make the play. So, I Stefanski deserves some blame. Of course he does. His assistant coaches deserve some blame. Of course they do. But for me, the players in the locker room deserve most of the blame because they're the ones out there not getting it done in between the white lines.
All right, Daryl, thank you very much. You know we love talking to you and we love listening to you on the It's Always Game Day in Cleveland podcast, also available on YouTube. Thanks, Daryl.
Thanks, D.
You bet, guys.